All right, let's go ahead and get started. We're getting a little of a bit of a late start this morning. Alka, have we done an intro to you and your team on this call before? I think Greg was here, but I don't think he we didn't get a rundown of what you're doing, I don't think. Do you remember doing anything like that?
So I believe Greg, in his first introductory call to you guys, did so. This is my first call in the interim. Happy to provide more background, but I'm Alka Gupta with Global ID, and I'm just keen to hear where we are.
Okay, great. Thanks. We're going to move the agenda out around a bit to try and dovetail the variety of items we're talking about today together. We're going to start out by talking a bit about blockchain. So first up is blockchain and identity. All right, so We're a number of us are still kind of trying to get cleared to be able to talk about this stuff publicly. We're waiting another week to make sure that we're cleared to talk about it. But in general, we are inviting a number of organizations that are currently involved around blockchain and identity and credentials to come in and present in 30-minute chunks over the next month and a half to 2 months. The primary purpose of this is to try and get some amount of cohesion around identity and blockchain as it relates to verifiable claims. So one potential thing that we might talk about is this upcoming ID 2020 design workshop that is happening in New York City this coming weekend. We are discussing things that are important specifically to the verifiable claims work, which is how do you establish a self-sovereign identity? How do you make sure that the person is in control of their data? What are the technical solutions to do that? So to be clear, the verifiable claims work that we're doing here is not entirely reliant on blockchain, but we do feel that there are a number of aspects of blockchain technology that could help in the identity space. So we're hoping to kind of explore that over the next month. So we're hope again, and we're trying to share it more openly, but a number of us are under NDAs where we can't discuss it openly yet. So we're trying to get those cleared so that we can talk about it more openly. Any questions on that? I apologize that that's somewhat vague, but does anyone have any questions around the blockchain identity stuff?
With whom are you under NDA? Can you say that?
I'm sorry, say that again?
With whom are you under NDA? I don't even know who you're... Okay, that's fine. Good, thanks.
Yeah, not yet, but we're hoping to have the person, the group that we're under NDA onto the call so that we can no longer be around it, be under NDA for this stuff. Any other questions?
Yeah, Manu. For those that don't know more about for those that don't know more about or don't have context on the ID 2020 or what you're referring to, at some point after we can lift the NDA, or if there's some URL to refer us to even at the highest level, I don't want to take the team's time, but just some context would be helpful at some point.
Sure. Hey, Alka, are you on the IRC chat channel?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so we sent out a link. Let me mm-hmm. If you're on Skype, I can try and share it with you. I'll email it to you. But I shared a link in the chat channel that we have for the call for the design workshop. So the design workshop is not, that's not the NDA thing. It's completely open. There are a number of papers that are being published. What's happening this Friday is the United Nations is co-hosting a workshop on their Identity 2020 initiative, which is an attempt to give the 1.8 billion people without an identity on the planet an identity by the year, you know, have pilots running by 2020 and have many of those people with their own portable identity by the year 2030. So the United Nations event this Friday is about that, and then the design workshop over the weekend is around how we get this done from a technical perspective. The verifiable claims folks, a number of us, are going to be participating in that workshop to try and figure out what the architecture and things of that nature, what they look like. All of that is completely open, accessible to the public. There are position papers that have been published. We will be publishing, you know, what happened at the workshop afterwards. And there are aspects of that that touch on blockchain. There are a lot of blockchain identity folks that are going to be there. But the other thing that I'm talking about, which is what some of us are under NDA for, is a separate thing. But they're all kind of going in the same sort of direction, which is trying to figure out what blockchain and identity might look like. And the effect on this group is that, you know, clearly the verifiable claims are intended to be stored through some kind of blockchain mechanism at some point in the future. And what we're trying to do is get some of these disparate communities talking to one another through this call. Was that a bit more clear, Alka?
Very, very helpful.
Okay, great. Shane, you're on the queue.
Thank you.
I know that the W3C is holding a blockchain workshop coming up, and I'm just wondering if there's any sort of cross-pollination going on or whatever.
Yes, there is. I think there are a number of people in this group that are submitting position papers around blockchain and identity. To be clear, the W3C blockchain workshop is specifically not focusing on the financial services aspect of it. They're looking at blockchain as they're looking at non-financial industry use cases. Clearly, there are going to be financial industry use cases, but they're specifically interested in things like, you know, identity and self-sovereign identity and things like that on the blockchain. So yes, Shane, to answer your question, we believe there's going to be cross-pollination.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the identity blockchain stuff? All right, so let's move on to our next agenda item. As I said, we're going to try and move some of these topics around. Dan Burnett, if we could get a quick update from you on the specification, verifiable claims data model specification, that'd be great.
Yes. So I've just put a link in the chat for the document. So let me just give a very brief summary again. I know we've got some new people on the call. Essentially, this document is sort of like a reverse engineering from some concrete examples that the credentials community group created in JSON, JSON-LD, and WebIDL, sort of reverse engineering back to the data model that underlies them. And so that's what we're trying to do, is actually capture that data model and then show how that data model can be represented in different syntactic languages such as JSON or WebIDL. So let me have you start. For those of you who have the document up, if you go to section 412, the best thing is to look at, just scroll down just a little bit, example 2. It's the first example in that section. And this is a very simple example that includes a claim inside it. So clearly the group has had no issues with the property in here, the claim property, where that contains an ID that would reference an identity ID of someone, and then the actual claim is that they're, you know, in this case, the age is over 21. The question is what to call the outer container. So there's this outer container that you can see here that contains, that has an ID, that has a type, an issuer, issued, etc. And in the original document that this was based on, that was called a credential. Now, I had taken out that that term, but I was requested to put it back, so I did in this version. So if you look at the beginning of 412, I say, for example, in JSON, a credential is expressed as a single JSON object, and so on. If you click on that link for credential, no, that actually takes you to the wrong place. Sorry, there's some linking issues here. Let me have you go straight to section 3.3. So section 3.3 is the part of the data model where we describe claims. And there's now a sentence that says, just for notational convenience, the container for a collection of claims will be referred to as a credential. Okay, and then we go on to say there's an ID, a type, and a claim, which must contain an ID and some custom property, and so on. So this should look familiar after looking at the JSON that we just saw. So the question here really is what terminology we want to use for these containers of claim information and sort of information, container information, the issuer issued information. I think that's the main topic that I think we're going to discuss in a moment, but I should point out that another change that was made since we talked about this last week was that originally for both claims and identity in here, I was working from examples where the type was represented as an array in JSON, as an array literal. So the question was really what that was. And after some back and forth discussion with Mr. Kellogg, we decided that the best description is that it is an unordered set of URIs. And then if you look at any of the examples, JSON or WebIDL or whatever, you'll see that any such unordered set of values will be represented as an array, as opposed to a set of name value pairs, a set of properties which would be represented as an object in JSON or as an interface or dictionary in WebIDL. So anyway, those are the two main changes. This clarification of the distinction between unordered sets of values and unordered sets of name value pairs, and also this the reintroduction of the term credential, but in a way that tries to make it as unobvious as possible. I know that sounds strange, but you know, if you look at the table of contents in the document, ignoring the appendices, which are old information, you're not going to see credential in here. And that's because we're sort of trying to minimize it, to downplay it, to hide it at the moment because we've had concerns with that term. Any questions?
Yeah, Manu. I've got a couple. So again, thank you so much for your work on this, Dan. I think the document is certainly it's great. It's great direction. I agree with it. At some point, we're going to have to tell the Web Payments Interest Group that we're ready to take kind of a voting package to the W3C membership for a vote. What do you feel we should focus on for about the next month to do that? So you know, where are we with the spec right now? Do you feel like we could hand it over to a working group? And if you don't feel like that, what do you feel we should be focusing on and doing over the next month to get us there?
Right. Was that to me or to everyone?
To you, primarily.
To me.
Then we could
yes.
Ask everyone the same question.
Sure. So there is a bunch of linking, editorial cleanup, and whatnot, which obviously I'll be doing. It needs an introduction and an abstract. I plan within the next week to write a first draft of that that people can look at and shoot down. But, you know, it's missing that top matter. I think the more important thing is for people to look at it and make sure that, look at the sections about the data model and how the data model is to be expressed in those three different formats, and make sure that there isn't something that they strongly disagree with, or that there isn't something that is substantially missing. Because that's the part that really is the core. You know, the rest of it, we can put weasel words in the abstract and introduction and whatnot. But this is the meat that has to be right.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Dan. So I think it's worth mentioning that the content in this document is something that we should have agreement on within the credentials community group and within the verifiable claims task force. We're basically saying that the content in this document is what we believe the solution should look like in the end, right? Because if we don't have agreement, at least in this group, it's going to be, the question is going to be raised whether or not this work is far enough along. And more specifically, the best thing that could come out of this is a set of large organizations saying that they believe that this is the right technical path forward. You know, not that every detail is there or that, you know, things can be modified, but, you know, large organizations believe that if this work goes through, that they would be willing to deploy it to their customers. That's the strongest kind of show of support. So if you're on this call and you're a very large organization, we've got a few. Please take the time to review this and let us know your thoughts on it, especially if you disagree with the current direction that we're taking. We do not want that to come out in a vote at W3C. We want to fix that before we go into a vote if there's disagreement. So that said, are there any other comments on the data model specification that we have? Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, so one other thing I did want to bring up is that this document does talk about identities, and that's something that originally we said we are not going to talk about. As I mentioned to you when I first started this, Manu, the reason I have it in there is because the credential, the claims data set does reference an identity, and it's very nice to be able to point to something. So we do need to decide what should happen with that. Is that text that should stay in where it is? Is it something that, you know, when the rest of the appendix, you know, old text just goes away, should the identity pieces be moved there? That's something that I don't really have a strong opinion on, but I suspect that you and others in the group will.
Nate, you're up.
Thanks. And Mona, if you wanted to respond to that, you could jump ahead of me.
It's okay. Go ahead, and I'll
respond. Okay. So my question was on the expressing claims in JSON, so, you know, plain JSON as opposed to JSON LD. What do we feel the utility of having a plain JSON expression format is? And I see this. I assume, like, when you process a linked data signature for plain JSON, you would essentially insert a context and then process the signature. I'm not even sure how the signature would work.
Okay, so the general question was, you know, what's the value of just plain JSON claims, and how do you do the signature on data like that? There are a couple of things that happen in the survey feedback that we put out. There was one very, very large telecom company that said, you're doing verifiable claims, but self-claims are also important, and self-claims don't really need to be digitally signed. So we would like to see if the model that you're proposing is flexible enough to do just simple self-claims. So things, and a self-claim is basically what you type into a form online these days. So if somebody asks you for a your name and your shipping address and things like that, those are all self-claims. There's no signature on them or anything of that nature. So there are a set of use cases that the telecom industry has where they believe that self-claims are important. So our data model is flexible enough to do self-claims. So we went ahead and put that in there. So that was kind of where that came from. As far as you know, how valuable it is, it really depends on the use case. And our assumption is that the telecom companies have use cases that are important to them for just self-claims. So anyway, that's where it came from. So that was one of the places it came from. The other place that it came from is that we have this linked data signature stuff, that is controversial in the cryptography community. So there's a certain subset of the crypto community that believes that we should be using Jose and Jason, Jose web signatures and JWTs and things of that nature. So what we're trying to do is say, if people want to do that, if people want to use a JWT, they can do that. They can express, you know, these standard claims and wrap it in JWT if they want to. And more recently, we have changed the linked data signature spec to allow allow the use of JWT-based signatures. Now, they are really ugly and nasty, and they have all the negatives that we've kind of talked about over the past couple of years. But our hope is to stave off some of the arguments against the verifiable claims work, because we are saying that linked data signatures are a nice way to do verifiable claims. So basically, we're saying the data model is generic enough to be fit into JSON. The linked data signatures format the signature format can be linked data signatures, or it can be Jose JWT. So we're not taking a position on that, and everything's flexible enough for either one to work. So we're not picking a winner. So that's kind of the, you know, why JSON and linked data signatures, why we're expressing things the way we are now. The other question that you had, Nate, was how do you take that JSON and transform it into a linked data signature? And what you said was spot on, which is you add a JSON-LD context of some kind, and then you can do a linked data signature over it. The other thing that you could potentially do is we are thinking about creating a new JSON clear text signature format that uses Jose and JWT. The only thing that's really going to push that work forward is if somebody comes out of the woodwork and says that that's really important to them. The established Jose group at the Internet Engineering Task Force has said that they want to see Jose and JWT applied to this. So if some of them come over to the group or join the working group and say, we will work on a way of doing a JWT and Jose for verifiable claims, then that'll be good, and that work will be done. If nobody steps up and does the work, then, you know, that work won't be done, and we'll be using linked data signatures, or there will be a way of signing this stuff using linked data signatures. Let me stop there. Nate, did that answer the question?
Yeah, that definitely answered my question. You know, I'll, maybe I can chat with you at some other point and just look at what those plain JSON signatures look like right now. I think it is a good idea to keep this work open to people who object to the linked data signatures procedure.
Okay. Great. Dan, you're on the queue.
Yes. So this is actually the second question that we've received about signatures, specifically in JSON. And so my question to you, Manu, is there a better example? And I'll point out to everyone that when we actually show JSON or JSON-LD or even WebIDL, you know, concrete examples here, they really are written just as examples, not as anything normative. But it might still be better if there is an example that we could use that doesn't raise as many questions as the current one, which uses a linked data signature in non-JSON LD.
So that signature mechanism does not exist. Someone would have to invent it or wrap the whole thing in a JWT, and what you would be looking at would be an unreadable blob of Base64 encoded data.
So, yeah, that's kind of what I thought, but I just was hoping there might – well, anyway, I was hoping for something, but if there isn't, then fine.
We have some ideas on how you could do it, but we're concerned that if we put some ideas in the spec, people will immediately object to it because we haven't thought it through. In depth, meaning how to use Jose JWT signatures with the verifiable claim stuff. So Nate's saying plus one for showing the simplest claim possible wrapped in JWT. Yeah, I mean, you know, we could certainly do that. Maybe we could show the non-Base64 encoded version of it, and that would be a good compromise. To put it another way,
so I would welcome an example from someone.
Right, okay. To do the examples, Dan, what we've been doing is you just find a JWT website thing, you dump in a private key, and you put in your JSON data, and it will create a wrapped signature for you, and then
okay.
You can kind of copy and paste that out of there. That's how we would put together an example of it. The linked data signature spec, which I'll put in here, that has more complete examples on how to do a linked data signature, what a linked data signature looks like. And if you go to the JSON-LD playground, it has digital signature stuff built into it. So if you want a real example of a linked data signature, there's a signature tab, a sign tab, that you can basically copy and paste an actual valid linked data signed claim out of that.
Yeah, I don't know that that's as crucial because, again, I think that's probably less controversial than plain vanilla JSON with a linked data signature.
Okay, so one of the things that came out of this discussion today then is we should definitely demonstrate both signature mechanisms in the spec, and they should be real signatures, how we expect the information to look for side-by-side comparisons. Okay, we definitely want to get to the CTI discussion today. Are there any other comments or concerns on the specification right now? Okay, let's move on to the Credential Transparency Initiative terminology discussion then. Let me attempt to try and summarize this discussion. This came about after a few of us on the call took a look at the Credential Transparency Initiative vocabulary. What we were trying to do is take the CTI work and express their credentials using the verifiable claims data model. And what we hit was a terminology modeling issue, meaning that the way the Credentials Transparency Initiative let me pause for a second. If someone, we can hear background noise from your mic, so if you could please mute if you're not speaking, that'd be great. Thank you. Okay, so the Credentials Transparency Initiative data model uses the word credential, but in a slightly different way than what we use it in this community group. And what we were concerned about was that we think that there might be a pattern emerging where each market vertical, so for example, banking and finance and healthcare and education and even subsets of education, use the word credential in slightly different ways. And so because what we're talking about is a universal international data model for expressing verifiable claims, how we use credential is important. And the question was, should we stay completely away from using the word credential and let other people use it however they want to? Or should we take on the burden of trying to align what credential means across these various ecosystems? There are pros and cons to doing either one, right? So the pro for us just not using the word credential at all is we enable different market verticals to use it how they've been using it. And in some cases, they're wildly different what they mean by a credential. So the pro is that, you know, we let the markets, the verticals figure it out themselves. The con is that almost inevitably there will be two market verticals that use the word credential in a way that's conflicting and is non-interoperable. And that could, you know, that could be an issue. Then all of a sudden it becomes this end-to-end discussion between all the different market verticals trying to figure out, you know, whether they're going to reuse the word credential or if they're going to try to pick a different word and things of that nature. So those are the pros and cons for letting the market verticals figure it out. If we basically say when we use the word credential, it means this. So do not reuse the word credential in your market vertical. Then at least there's one group that's trying to shepherd the credential terminology through to have an international meaning when it's used on the web. But then the downside there is that inevitably we will not end up talking to one of these market verticals, or one of the market verticals will disagree and do their own thing. So I believe that's kind of the basis for this discussion. The Credentials Transparency Initiative is using the word credential in a different way from how we're using it in our data model. We believe this is going to happen over and over and over again throughout the next couple of years. So the question is, should we stop using the word credential and start using different terminology? Or should we suggest that the Credential Transparency Initiative stop using the word credential in the way that they're using it? And of course, the third option is we figure some kind of middle ground there. Okay, so I'm going to shut up. And Stuart, one, did I get that right, or do you feel that there are a couple other things going on here? And maybe we could hear from Dave Longley and Eric Korb as well, who have been looking at this in more detail. So, Stuart, if you don't mind going first, and then followed by Dave Longley, and then Eric.
Sure, I don't mind. Manu, I think you do paint the picture correctly, and I think you paint the picture of variation in multiple verticals correctly as well. I do think, personally, that trying to get all of the market verticals to define credential in exactly the same way may be a fool's errand. That given the level of pushback that the CTI group is getting to not calling them credentials is an issue. I think some of the, I've said this before, but maybe to help clarify where CTI is, let me say it again. There are, in addition to this kind of murkiness around what credential means based on in different verticals, there is confusion around the use of the word in three different contexts. One, it's used to describe the thing that defines the substance of a credential. So in other words, Cisco has a credential for networking. Universities, colleges have degree programs. And those things that they created, whether anybody ever earned them or not, that thing that they created, that abstract thing that they created, are called credentials. So that's one. The thing that someone holds, in other words, that they earn, is also called credential. And then verifiable claims, then there are claims of a relationship between that thing created and person, the verifiable claim. A credential is used for all of those. But if I get speak specifically about CTI, and we're looking at organizations that span educational institutions, medicine, law, workforce development, that community defines or labels the things that they create as credentials. They are credentials. And like most verticals, you know, they have a lot invested in it. Read their literature. Read what, for example, IMS has a new program on better digital credentialing. So that whole credentialing community has an investment in the name, a heavy investment in the name. I think the problem in trying to wrestle with verifiable claims taking on, putting a stake in the ground as to what it means, is that it narrows the definition of a credential to a set of claims. And credentials exist independent of claims. And that's where the pushback from the, and I'm going to say the credentialing community, which probably cuts across a number of verticals. But that's where the pushback is there. I'd also note, though, I mean, you know, in the earlier presentation around the model, the verifiable claims model, wanting to make the word claims unobtrusive, to play it down, to push it into the background. I think that speaks volumes. So it is a question now. As a result of probably what comes out of this discussion today, what I take back to CTI will be, you know, what is the justification for narrowing it to a set of claims and excluding all of the definitions of all of those people with different vertical definitions, perhaps, that have a huge investment in what they do, which is create and engage in the processes of credentialing. So it's the pushback is quite significant. You know, in the model, it talks about, claim sets. So I think verifiable claims that this group has the possibility to slightly modify, and it'll leave open that multiplicity of verticals, but slightly modify to at least eliminate the current issue of trying to deal with a credential from the CTI in the context of a verifiable claim. You know, we hear claim set throughout the whole dialogue today, with the exception of credential being a word that defined an agenda item. It's always claims, verifiable claims. Credentials never comes up in the conversation. Anyway, that's probably enough. And the other folks probably want to jump in with that. You know, Dave and others.
Great. Thank you, Stuart. That certainly is helpful to understand kind of the CTI position on it and how they're used, how the word credential is used differently in that those sets of communities. Dave, would you mind kind of going?
Sure. So to kind of speak to the idea of credentials requiring claims to exist, I kind of get that argument. Looking at the CTI stuff, we kind of came into it with the exact opposite problem, which is that a lot of the way that the CTI terminology works is it presumes that there will be effectively no claims, or rather the claims are totally out of scope. So the VCTF and the credentials community group kind of came into using the term credential because it's something that somebody holds on to, that you have, that you kind of the real world analogy is something you maybe put into your wallet or that you carry your diploma. You could show it to somebody. It's something that belongs to you and has some kind of tie to you. And what CTI is kind of modeling is some information that's a little bit more abstract. That's about, for example, the types of degrees that a university might offer. So a university might offer a master's in computer science, or they might offer an MBA. And a person who is holding on to a credential doesn't hold on to that in the abstract. They hold on to sort of what you might think of as like a certificate that says that they have this degree and they earned it on a certain date, you know, after they completed their coursework or whatever. And so that's kind of the struggle with how we've been trying to make sure that we could use CTI vocabulary terms in the VCTF work. There's a Google Doc that I put a link to into IRC where Eric and I were trying to figure out how to model these earned certificates, effectively trying to come up with ways to create verifiable claims that say, this is a person with this name and they earned this certificate. And in so doing, we found that the certificate that they earned would be this thing that is not really defined in CTI or in VCTF, which is fine. But the type of the certificate would be something defined by CTI. And if we're just using our terminology, the thing that the person is going to hold on to and be able to share with websites or share with what we've been calling credential consumers is what we've been calling a credential. It's the thing that they get. It's the thing that's specific to them that talks about the claims made about them. And one of the claims made about them is that they might have earned a certificate of a particular type. And that's where we found that the CTI vocabulary comes in very nicely because they define those certificate types. The difference is they refer to what we refer to as certificate type as a credential. And so that's kind of where the conflict is in terminology. And so people are welcome to look at this Google Doc and see what they think about this. And we really need to figure out a way to reconcile this. One way forward is to just say we're going to define credential the way that we've been defining it since a couple years ago when the community group started up. And we'll just do some kind of mapping to CTI. And another way is to try to come up with a different set of words. I think one thing that would, I do think it would be kind of awkward for people to say that they carry a claim set with them and that they're sharing a claim set with other people. I think it's a little bit more natural to say I'm sharing my credentials with person X or person Y. So, I don't know where we want to go with this terminology, but that hopefully lays out kind of what the differences are. CTI is kind of talking about what I'm calling a certificate type in the abstract, an MBA, master's degree, types of things that a university might offer without thinking about or involving claims. In the VCTF work, we're talking about actually getting something that we've been calling a credential, getting a credential that says there's a claim that you have earned this certificate of this type. And so that's kind of, from the VCTF's point of view, the difference in terminology.
Hey, Manu, would you put me on cue? I'm not on the IRC. It's Richard.
Sure, absolutely. Eric, you're next.
Sorry, I was on mute. I was the opposite of Richard. So I just echo what Dave has. Obviously, we've been collaborating together on this, and my personal feedback on what Richard had said. What Stuart had said was that I find it interesting that a community that you serve, which is credentialing, is having issues with using the word credential. Although I understand there's a lot of history there. But I would just echo that the model of credential could represent anything. And once we were able to get over the hurdle of that conflict, the context that and vocabulary that CTI built worked, and it worked perfectly, and allowed us a lot of flexibility. And I could see us defining multiple kinds of credential types, whether it be license or degree or would be medical license or what have you. So, you know, I'm very supportive of the CTI work, and I'm very supportive of the work here, and I saw it working up until that conflict. So I'm just, and we're actually trying to put this into real use. So it works the way that we laid it out with where Dave has provided this document. So that's I'm just concurring with what Dave's saying, and I continue to support the idea of using credential as a class.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. So I think one of the things that we're circling in on is that some communities, like CTI, use the word credential in the abstract sense, and other communities, like the BCTF work, use the word credential in the concrete sense. There are a couple of ways out of this, right? So one of the things that, because we really have no ability to change what the CTI is doing. Well, we can suggest changes. So one change one option is no change. We continue to use the word credential. We have a strong definition for what that is. We've been using it for a long while, so we don't change. And we figured out how to model the CTI stuff so we can use it in the verifiable claims work. So that's option one. Option two is to change the word credential to claim set. As Longley said, that is awkward, but it is also possible. A third option is to change the word credential to certificate. So that credential is something in the abstract, and a certificate is something that is concrete. So just so folks know, we do have a couple of suggestions on how we could change things to align. What we're trying to do is get feedback from everyone on if those changes would work for people or if they wouldn't want to make those changes. Richard, you're up next on the queue.
We're not going to solve the semantic type between status and physical object, and I don't think we need to. Certificate, Manu, I think just confuses the educational community because they strongly distinguish between a credential and a certificate. They're not the same thing. Often one is a lower status.
Same with the licensing community. They get really up in arms about the difference between license and certificate.
Exactly. And so when we get into the nouns that are in common use, we end up with this trip. That's why we ended up changing our task force name in the first place, was because we were tripping over the groups, as has been very well described. I just wonder if we might make a distinction here. What we're building is a standard that will be implemented, and we're essentially giving the name to those things that are represented by the standard. And credential works as well for anything as me. I like that. I understand that's a conflict. But one way to get around that is just simply put a letter in front of the word credential, like V credential, meaning verified credential, and say that it is the standard that we're describing, not every noun and document or variation of the things that are out there in the world, but we're describing something new, and leave a word in there like credential with some augmentation of it that allows you to describe that what we're actually doing, which is we're not defining every credential, certificate, degree, license in the world. We're describing a method by which they will be represented and verified. So I don't know if that helps, but that's something that occurred to me when I was hearing this very good discussion, that we might try that as a fourth avenue.
That is actually very helpful, and I can see how it could potentially work. Matt,
that's a great idea.
Matt, you're up next.
This is sort of in response to a couple speakers ago about trying to guess what a end user might state. Like, you know, we wouldn't expect a person to say, I'm sharing my collection of claims or claim set. I think it's folly for us to overthink and perseverate on what an actual professional or end user might, the language that they might use. They're very likely, and probably we should expect them to use the language of the vertical that they're participating in. So if they're a student, they're talking about degrees. If they're a doctor, they're talking about licenses or board certifications. They're not, or, and if they're more generic, it's their resume or their CV that they're sharing. So it's kind of irrelevant to us what the end user is going to say and how they're going to refer to their collection of claims that they're trying to assert, verify, and share. It's much better for us to kind of step back and say, from a technology perspective, we have this abstract idea of a credential that can be represent any number of these ideas. And as technologists, the credential has a few meanings, but they're pretty well defined. They're not necessarily in conflict with each other, as long as we sort of understand the context in which they're used and sort of get out of the end user's headspace.
Got it. Great. Thanks, Matt. Right. So I think we're seeing a lot of plus ones to modifying the word credential with something. Open credential, verified credential, identity credential, iCredential. I think Apple has a trademark on that already. Stuart, I completely jumped you on you. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's all right. Just a couple of notes. I too, I think for something like the credential, I think that would be great, would work. I would avoid certificate. Certificate is actually has formal meanings. A lot of these do, and I think in a way, you do want to get out of the headspace of end users and so forth, and that the verticals, again, will do what they do. And so, I don't know, as a member of this group, I think the modification of the word credential would work, wouldn't it? I mean, in terms of the conflict between and leave CTI and the other verticals to do what they do in defining credential or whatever in their own namespace. I would avoid, common terms like certificate and so forth as being that, for example, the thing that the person holds, because in context it has a quite different meaning than that formal meaning, just as license what it does.
Great. Okay, so I'm hearing that we have consensus around modifying the word credential in this group with something. We don't know what it is yet, web credential, identity credential, open credential, whatever. But I think just us agreeing to modify that word addresses the CTI's concerns. Would you agree with that statement, Stuart?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So let me put a proposal down here. Change the credential. Let me see. Augment the credential terminology in the specification with a modifier like open credential or identity credential or V credential. Okay, so we're going to ask for plus one, minus ones from folks once I put this proposal in there. So the proposal is to augment the credential terminology in the specification with a modifier like open credential or identity credential or verifiable credential. So plus one, minus one, plus zero that. Okay, I'm seeing unanimous. That's resolved. Great. Good. That took much less time than I thought that it would take. So that's great. In the 30 seconds, or no, 2 seconds that we have remaining on the call. Very quickly, we'll figure out what the modifier is on a separate call later on. I wanted to mention target date for the web payments IG handoff. We should have a package, voting package together for the web payments interest group before they meet at the end of June. So that gives us a little less than a month and a half to put that entire package together. I think it is doable, but we're definitely going to have to start making better progress than we have been making on the deliverables. I think a lot of the issues that have not been moving is my fault. I have my schedules overloaded, so I'm going to try and hand those off to select people so that we start making better progress on them, just as Dan has been making excellent progress on the specification. Okay, so just a general heads up that I think we're planning on putting this whole voting package together, and we plan to put it in front of the Web Payments IG at the end of June. David Ezell, sorry, that's a heads up to you. As the chair of the Web Payments Interest Group, we should talk about this during the call next week. Okay, anything else for the call today? Anything else we should be aware of over the next week? Okay, if not, the call next week, half of it will be on blockchain and identity, and the other half will be on updates on the work items. Thank you, everyone, for the call this week. Have a great rest of the week.
Yes, thank you, Manu. Bye.
Thank you, Manu.